Once again, it's time for the hour of the time, and I'm William Cooper. I have a letter here, folks. I want to read to you tonight. And let me see here. Here we go. Got tons of mail today, folks, and I want to thank you all for your compliments and your rave reviews, and several people, all from different states, are now calling the Hour of the Time the greatest show on earth, and that certainly gave a great boost to my spirits, and apparently everyone loves the series on NASA, Moon to America, and of course they did. Anyway, here's a letter that I thought you might enjoy. There's a whole bunch. I could spend several hours reading letters, but I want to stick with the subject. It says, Dear Bill, great job with the NASA Moon to America book last week. Enclosed is 30 Fed dollars. Please send a copy of NASA Moon to America to my street address as it appears above. How the hell does the U.S. Postal Service... Postal? How did that get in my mouth? How the hell does the U.S. Postal Service know when a package contains a particular book title? Well, it's really very simple. All they have to know is who's publishing that book and the return address that's on the package. That's how they know. Also, if they have placed somebody or asked somebody at the post office where they're normally mailed, that's another way that they know. And however they do it, they do it. And that's why we use UPS for almost everything that we do. When I first published my book, when we sent them through the U.S. mail until they caught on that we were doing it, they all got through. And then all of a sudden, everything we mailed disappeared. And it was a tremendous financial blow. So we stopped using the U.S. Post Office unless you force us to. If you send us a P.O. box, then we have to send you whatever we're sending you to the P.O. box. And every once in a while, whatever we send disappears. Luckily, we don't send to very many P.O. boxes. Most of you understand that. And also, what we send by UPS is insured up to $25. So if it does happen to disappear, which it never has with UPS, we've never lost one single package with UPS in all the years that we've been using them. Not one. And if we were to lose one, it's insured up to $25, and if it's something expensive, we can insure it above that amount. When you send it through the U.S. Post Office, nothing is certain, nothing is assured, and everything that we send, we have trouble with. Not all the time. And certain things that we ship, we have more trouble with than others. So I don't know all the answers to how they know. I do know some answers. One is by the return address. And we have to put a return address on there, because if you gave us a wrong address or there was a typing error or for some reason it doesn't get delivered to you, we hope it'll come back to us. So anyway, let me continue with his, but I wanted to answer that for him. Says, I'm sure I must be missing something. Better to go UPS than be sorry. The 1/6 gravity show earlier this year put most of the nails in the coffin. But last week, buried was the corpse representing any iota of faith I ever had in the Apollo program and NASA. It became final the other day at a bookstore. Listen to this, folks. This is incredible. Because he stopped looking at things with his emotional belief system, and he started examining with his own mind. And when you do that, incredible things happen. He said, I was looking at some establishment book on Apollo that contained a few photos. I started chuckling to myself, but then became more reflective with a bit of that sinking feeling you get when stunned by something. I had now fully accepted that I had never seen one picture of a man standing on the moon's surface. The Hour of the Time is the only program that can invoke that sinking feeling as the roaches scurry for cover. Signed, Daniel. You see, all of a sudden he realized as he looked at those photographs that he was seeing the same things that I was telling him about on this broadcast. He saw the shadows converge. He saw that he could read the writing in portions of the photograph where there should have been no light whatsoever. He saw with his own eyes, with his own mind, using his own intellect, and not with the eyes that he had seen with before. And that makes me extremely happy. I've often said, folks, and I really mean it, if I just reach one single person out there with this broadcast, then I have really done something wonderful. If I can cause one single person to think an original thought and stop believing what they've been told, then I've really accomplished something great. And I think that I've managed to do that over the years. And now, you see, Daniel's been listening to this broadcast for a long, long time. He didn't just start. But finally it got through. And instead of picking up the moon photographs and looking at them and saying, boy, these are wonderful pictures of the guys on the moon, he really looked at them for the first time in his life. And for the first time in his life, he saw what was really there. And I don't know if it was the first time in his life, but at least an incredible thing happened. He figured it out with his own mind. And that's worth more to me than all the money you could heap in this studio from any place that you could get it.
Well, I went and lost her to the great imposter. I stood and watched her fall. Couldn't help her at all. Poetry, so sweet, has her at his feet. She thinks she's the one, but he has just begun. All her friends, they just watch her, for they know the great imposter. Don't she know he's on a stage? It's not real, it's just a play. And he's playing the part.
We continue now with NASA Moon to America. And remember, folks, what you're hearing on these broadcasts is much more than just this book, because I'm not only reading out of the book, but I'm giving you snatches of information and facts that I have discovered in my own research, along with what Renee has written in this book. So if you would like to take advantage of that, you can also order the tapes. That's up to you. For non-members, the tapes are $10. Of any broadcast that we've ever done, except ones that we specifically can't sell because of copyrighted material contained therein. And if you are a member, the tapes are $8 per tape. And just like always, unless you are told otherwise, make check or money order payable to Annie, A-N-N-I-E, and you can send them to the regular old address. The Intelligence Service, P.O. Box 1420, Sholo, spelled exactly as it sounds, Arizona, 85901. The book, NASA Moon to America, is an expensive book. It, first place, contains three excellently printed color photographs, official NASA color photographs. Quite a few black and white photographs, which enable you to see with your own eyes, and you can order these photographs with from NASA if you want and get the exact same photographs that you're looking at in this book, NASA Moon to America. It's expensive. The retail price is $25. We tack on another $5 because we deliver by UPS. And we will not send this book through the mail to a post office box. So don't even bother sending us a P.O. box. I won't do it. Because if the mail doesn't get to you, then you're going to claim that we didn't send it, and we owe you money, and we've lost a book, and we lose out. So it's got to go UPS, folks. UPS to anywhere in the United States with this book costs between $4 and $6. Okay? So somebody wrote and said, why is the book $30 when I heard somewhere that it was $25? Well, in the first place, you just can't get this book just anywhere. And if you can get it in a bookstore, it is $25. But since we have to send it UPS, and it cost us a lot of money to buy it from the people who print it, it's $30. And in answer to the question of the critics, no, we're not making a whole bunch of money on this book. We're making a very little bit of money. And it goes to further this broadcast, to help us in our research, to fund our programs, and we have many other programs besides the Hour of the Time, and I'm not talking about radio, I'm talking about ongoing investigations, people who need to be paid for certain services, Freedom of Information Act requests, all kinds of things that we are engaged in. But it doesn't matter, folks, because let me tell you this. I get letters all the time from people who say, you're just in this for the money. If I were, I would be advertising my own book every night, ladies and gentlemen. I would be advertising all kinds of things. I would not just be accepting our sponsorship of Swiss America Trading to pay the airtime. I would also charge them for my time. People who really are in this because they care and tell the truth aren't making any money. We just barely make it from month to month. And I really don't give a damn whether you believe it or not. It happens to be true, and I've made the statement many times. Anybody who doubts it can travel out here at your own expense, and I'll be happy to let you examine the state of my finances until your little heart is overflowing with figures and numbers, and you'll find out that it's true. Nobody else will make that statement but me, because it is true. And I also happen to believe in the American dream. I happen to believe in capitalism. I happen to believe in our way of life. I happen to believe in the principles and ideals upon which this country was based, which says that if I have a service that I'm offering to somebody and they believe that that service is worth paying that price for, that I'm entitled to make whatever profit or money that I am able to make in order to realize the dream. And if you don't believe that, in my estimation, you're not an American. I don't know what you are. I've also had people call and say, but this usually happens when I'm on a speaking tour. Somebody will stand up in the audience and want to know how much I was paid to give the speech. And I tell them it's none of their business, but I was paid, and I'm entitled to be paid for my services because I've spent many years doing the research. And if somebody didn't think it was worth it, they wouldn't have paid me to come and speak. And then I am told that my information is not credible because I charged for it. My standard answer for that is go buy a set of Encyclopedia Britannica and tell them that their information is no good because they charge for it. And also take a look at what they charge. I think that's incredibly funny. And I think all these boobs walking around here pretending to be patriots, and they're really socialists at heart, is just incredibly hilarious. It's come to the point, folks, where I don't even like the word patriot anymore because it does not denote what I believe. Most of these people have agendas that have nothing to do with liberty, nothing whatsoever. And so I've sort of divorced myself from that term. If you believe in liberty, I use the word liberty now. I believe in liberty. I'm an American. And, you know, don't even try to stick the others on me. I don't want anybody to call me Christian anymore because of what all these different Christian people are doing. Even though I believe in Jesus Christ and that he is my Savior and I follow his teachings, I don't want anybody to call me Christian anymore. And I'll give you one good example. I got another letter from the good Christian. Let me read it to you. Let me find it first. You've got to hear this, folks. Then we'll get back into our NASA moon. You've just got to hear this. And this is going to be framed and put up beside the other one. And this is one reason I don't want to have anything to do with these people. They're crazy. Cooper, Jesus forgive you for your sins. We don't need to legislate morality. Jesus has already done it for us. Don't you know that, you homo lover? Maybe you like it so much that you do it too, what these faggots do. Why don't you read the scriptures, the Old Testament, and see what God told the Jews to do to the homos? If God wanted the Jews to do that, and we know what they are, then you can imagine what sweet Jesus wants us to do to them. You disgust me so much, I think I'll go out and beat the blankety blank out of a couple of faggots in the name of sweet Jesus. I don't want these faggots to ever look at my children. I'll beat the blankety blank out of my children and the faggots also if I ever see that. If I ever come to Arizona, I might beat the blankety blank out of you too, you faggot lover. You talk about your wife, but I bet I know what you do on the side or in the rear. I bet it's with those slanty-eyed faggots who help you out too. Jesus help you for your transgressions. Signed, a good Christian. I don't need to comment on that, folks. This guy needs a straitjacket. He's out of his mind. And I sent the original of his letter and the envelope that it came in to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and a copy to the sheriff because he threatened me. And that's what I do with every letter or communication I ever get that threatens me. That's where they go. Every time, and I've said it over the years, and these idiots still insist upon doing it. It's okay with me. And by the way, if you want to come out to Arizona and try to beat the blankety blank out of me, get on your little horse and get on out here. Because like I said the other night, folks, and like I've said for many years, I made my peace with death in Vietnam. I'm not afraid of any of you. I'm not afraid of the government. I'm not afraid of Bill Clinton. I'm not afraid of the United States Army or the Internal Revenue Service or that stupid turncoat traitor over in St. John's or the police or anybody else. I've made my peace with death and with God and with myself. And I'm fighting a battle, and I know that sooner or later somebody's going to get to me, and it doesn't bother me one bit. I'll get to solve the ultimate mystery and see what's really on the other side. Because let's face it, folks, no matter what we believe or what we adhere to or what our religion is, there's still always that question mark in the back of our mind, and none of us will ever really know until it happens what's really over that barrier called death. I look forward to finding out. I don't want to do it anytime soon. I certainly don't want to be a martyr. I don't want to leave this world until my time comes. But when my time comes, and it's really my time, I'm ready for that. Okay.
My true love was true.
I didn't know that song was up next, folks. I'll see you later. I'm going to go dance with Annie.
think they could doubt my love. Yet today, my love has flown away. I am without my love.
Without my love.
Now, laughing friends deride, tears I cannot hide. Your eyes.
Smoke gets
in your
eyes. Oh, boy. That was fun. Well, I left off when Neil Armstrong said, "The sky is black, you know, it's a very dark sky," talking about out there. Now, I find this all extremely difficult to understand because I have been in the woods at night when it was closet black. I've been on the bridge wing of an aircraft carrier in the middle of the Indian Ocean in the middle of the darkest night. I've also been on a submarine at 600 feet underwater when we lost all of our power and lights. So I know what black is. I know what dark is. On clear nights, even those with the new moon, and folks, for those of you who don't know or are not aware, the new moon is when there's no moon. You cannot see a moon. I could travel with ease through the woods, using only the light provided by the stars. I was a river patrol boat captain on the Takhan River at the DMZ. Our base camp was Quaviet, and we patrolled from Quaviet to Dong Ha, and occasionally up the Quang Tri Cutoff. And sometimes we would make excursions west of the Dong Ha Bridge. Not very often, I can assure you. It was an extremely dangerous place to be, the whole river. And I think that I was one of the few boats that had the guts to try to make it from the Takhan River up Jones Creek as far as I could go until the boat ran aground, trying to make it as close to the DMZ as I could, because it was a well-known infiltration route. At times we could reach out and touch the bank. I had a good crew. And I managed to learn to do something in Vietnam that I never dreamed was possible. There is such thing as a sixth sense, and we are capable of doing things that we never believe that we can do until we are forced to do it. You see, in the middle of the monsoons, and the monsoons last for about 3 months, it's a solid overcast of clouds. There are no stars, there's no moon, there are no lights, and you don't light up your boat. You don't turn on lights in the middle of the river at night, I can assure you, unless you have a death wish. When I first arrived on the river and was assigned to a boat and a crew just to ride with them for a few nights for a familiarization break-in tour, so to speak, I thought, my God, I'm never going to be able to do this. I'm going to disgrace myself right here because these guys are steering this boat up this river in pitch black, and they can't see anything, and they're not running aground or hitting the bank, and I don't know how they're doing it. And I didn't know how they were doing it. It scared me. That scared me more than having to face combat. I couldn't figure out what these guys were doing that was enabling them to navigate that river in pitch black darkness with no radar, no lights. You couldn't see your finger in front of your nose. No matter how hard you tried, that's how dark it was. And yet these guys were so good they could navigate that river from point to point, and they knew at every moment exactly where they were without running aground, without hitting the bank, without running into anybody else. And I thought, that's it. I've met my match. These are the most incredible men I've ever seen in my life. I'll never be able to do this. I'm going to disgrace myself in front of these wonderful men. And I was terrified. And so I got as close to the helmsman as I could on those nights. And I watched him and I listened. And I strained my eyes to see some signs of something that he could have been using. He couldn't even see the compass on the boat. That's how dark it was. And then about the third night, I had the incredible feeling that I knew where we were and that I knew when we should turn before the helmsman actually made the turn. And I found myself developing a part of me that I didn't even know existed. And I believe it was the fifth night I took the helm and traversed the river without running aground or hitting the bank. And I can't explain it to this day, ladies and gentlemen, because there is no explanation. Only those of us who did it understand what I'm talking about, and there is no way in the world that I could ever explain it to anyone else. I knew where I was. I could see in my mind the riverbanks. I knew when I had to make a turn. I knew where the sandbars were. I knew where the most likely points of ambush were located and when I was approaching them and when I was leaving them. I knew when I had reached the limits of my patrol area and when to turn the boat about. And what was even more incredible, eventually I developed this sense when we stopped the shaft and the boat was drifting. Now, when you have control over the RPMs of an engine and a propeller turning in the water, and you have your hands on the wheel, and you have control of the direction of the vessel, that's one thing. When you slip the transmission into neutral and you let go of the helm and the boat is drifting and you can still maintain that incredible ability, that's quite another. So I know that there's something beyond what we feel is our normal capabilities, and there may be something known as star blindness for some, and for others, an acute sense of being able to see. But as you're going to find out here, the contradictions don't pan out to that. But I know that somebody would raise this subject of some people can do things that others can't, that can't be explained. And so I want you to know that I believe that, and I understand that, and I know it, because it has happened to me. And there is no explanation that I can give you for it.
kick, one, two, three, jump.
The Hour of the Time, folks, is brought to you by Swiss American Trading. All the good people down there in Phoenix. I say down there because they're south of me, down in that hot desert where I don't live. And they produce a newsletter that is just incredibly packed with some of the most astounding facts regarding money and precious metals that I think you've probably ever seen. I know I can't wait to get my copy every time they come out with a new issue. I want you to call them and tell them that you're a regular listener to the Hour of the Time and ask for the current newsletter. They'll send it to you for nothing. You don't have to purchase anything. But while you're at it, I want you to thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. You know, they pay for all the airtime, both on satellite and on shortwave. They don't give me any money. I don't put anything in my pocket from it. They do it because they care about this broadcast. They care about the information that I impart to you. They believe in the message. I've always told you, folks, I am a messenger. Whether you believe it or not, whether you care, it is true, and someday that's going to come home to you. The message that I deliver is important. Craig Smith is aware of that, and that's why he sponsors this broadcast. And because of the way that they do business, honestly, and I mean tremendously straight, they have a buyback program. They guarantee what they do, and they guarantee what they sell you. I also guarantee what they do, folks. Everything is taped. They can't lie to you and get away with it, because we just pull out the tape and play it. You can't lie about what deal you made with them either, because we just pull out the tape and play it. Not only that, there's another call made before your purchase is delivered. And that's about 2 or 3 days after you've agreed to the purchase. When everything is assembled, before it's shipped, you get a call. And they verify every term of the deal that you've made for the coins or the bullion or whatever it is that you purchased, and make sure that you understand those terms and that there was no misunderstanding whatsoever between you and the salesperson. And that call is recorded. Swiss America Trading is a group of people, ladies and gentlemen, that really believe in ethics and good moral behavior. Every single person listening to this broadcast should have at least a portion of your assets in real money, gold or silver coin. Call Swiss America Trading, ask for the newsletter, tell them that you're a steady listener to the Hour of the Time, and you'll get red carpet treatment. I guarantee that. And while you're at it, folks, ask how you can get your hands on some real money. Ask them to make some recommendations. If you don't really understand anything about gold or silver coin, or numismatic coins, or gold or silver bullion, or platinum, or any of the other precious metals, ask them to give you a course in these things, and they will be very honest with you. They'll send you literature. They'll answer your questions. They'll give you recommendations on how to purchase gold and silver coin, platinum coin. I'll bet you didn't even know there were platinum coins, most of you. Gold and silver bullion, platinum bullion, and there are other precious metals that I have not mentioned. So call Swiss America Trading at 1-800-289-2646. Tell them William Cooper sent you. 1-800-289-2646. You'll be glad that you did.
Hey, darling, oh, 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 do I, oh, darling, oh, oh.
On clear nights, ladies and gentlemen, even those nights with a new moon, which is no moon, I can travel with no problem through the woods, using only the light provided by the stars when the stars are shining. Most people with good eyesight can do that, and my eyesight is not that good. I'm nearsighted, for number one. And number two, the vicious attack, physical attack upon me years ago in order to try to shut me up has caused me a lot of trouble with my right eye. And I can still see okay by starlight. When I was a lot younger, I could get through the woods in total pitch black darkness just by feeling my way. I'm not talking about what I did in Vietnam. I'm talking about being in familiar woods and being able to feel my way. I knew where things were. When my eyesight was really good, and I mean really, really good, and I wanted to read something that I knew my dad didn't want me to read, I could even read by starlight. And that's, of course, when the sky was perfectly clear and all of the stars were out. If I really concentrated, I could read by starlight. I could read easily by moonlight, no problem. And in the Navy, I astounded everybody by doing something they said was impossible. I could go out in the middle of the night when you were not supposed to shoot the stars with a sextant. And if the moon was bright, I could use the artificial horizon of the moon and shoot stars, get a perfect fix every time. And that brought me a small, teeny bit of fame amongst my peers. What makes this star blindness so strange is that it comes and goes. On the Gemini 10 mission, while spacewalking, Collins reported, "My God, the stars are everywhere, above me, on all sides, even below me somewhat, down there next to that obscure horizon. The stars are bright, and they're steady." Now, can you imagine this after everybody else said they couldn't see any stars anywhere? Then, by the time he gets to the Agena, the stars are gone. 3 years later, on his way to the moon in Apollo 11, he writes, quote, "I can't see the Earth. Only the black starless sky behind the Agena," end quote. And on the next page, quote, "As I slowly cartwheel away from the Agena, I see nothing but the black sky for several seconds," end quote. Now this guy, who could see the stars in the Gemini 10 mission, now cannot even see the Earth. Pages later, he also writes, quote, "What I see is disappointing, for only the brightest stars are visible through the telescope, and it is difficult to recognize them when they are not accompanied by the dimmer stars," end quote. But as I told you last night and the other night, they had to see the stars because they had to navigate. And we'll get to that later. But that was an incredible statement. Our normal stars, seen clearly through a thick atmosphere here on Earth by the naked eye, were apparently so dim in space that even a telescope fails to reveal them. All I can conclude is that star blindness must be like malaria. You're subject to unpredictable random attacks of star blindness when you are in zero gravity. Now, it's a good thing that this doesn't happen here on Earth. Imagine the consternation if half the people say, "Hey, see that bright star up there?" And the other half say, "What star? Where?" Nevertheless, as the Apollo 11 capsule rounded the moon, ladies and gentlemen, the situation changed. All of a sudden, as reported by Mr. Hurt, Apollo 11 Commander Neil Armstrong, by far the most laconic member of the crew, was also moved to comment, quote, "Houston, it's been a real change for us. Now we are able to see the stars again and recognize constellations for the first time on the trip. The sky is filled with stars, just like nights out on Earth," end quote. How do you explain this? But as they rounded the moon once again, the situation brings forth this comment from Mike Collins, quote, "Outside my window, I can see stars, and that is all. Where I know the moon to be, there is simply a black void. The moon's presence is defined solely by the absence of stars," end quote. Naturally, Collins couldn't see the stars if he were looking toward the dark side of the moon. But if the Apollo 11 rotated or came around the limb of the moon, stars should be visible. But more confusion emerges as we read the following explanatory quote by Collins. Listen to this, quote, "Toward the sun, nothing. Nothing can be seen but its blinding disk, whereas down the sun, there is simply a black void. The stars are there, but they cannot be seen, because with sunlight flooding the spacecraft, the pupil of the eye involuntarily contracts, and the light from the stars is too dim to compete with the reflected sunlight, as both enter the eye through the tiny aperture formed by the contracted pupil. No, to see the stars, the pupil must be allowed to relax, to open wide enough to let the starlight form a visible image on the retina, and that can be done only by blocking out the sunlight. Then they rig plates over the windows," and he reports, "under these conditions, the eyelid slowly dark adapts itself, and the brighter stars gradually emerge from the void," end quote. 14 years later, Collins wrote another book. The writing is so different from his first that one would almost think it was written by someone else, or at least another ghost writer. In it, he proclaims this, quote, "My God, the stars are everywhere, even below me. They're somewhat brighter than on Earth," end quote. And toward the end of that book, he declares, quote, "Never a day without sunshine or a night without stars. Fat, unblinking stars," end quote. Gee whiz. You think Collins saw the light at last? Every star, ladies and gentlemen, is just a point of light. Even the closest stars cannot be magnified or resolved into a perceptible sphere by the largest of our astronomical telescopes. However, point for point, a visible star is an intensely bright piece of light, much brighter even than the reflected sunlight from the moon. As you may know, you can see the moon in the daytime when it's invisible to all who don't know the secret. And I got to tell you, I can see the moon in the daytime when it's on this side without even doing this. I don't know how. They say you're not supposed to, but I can. And I know other people who can look up in the sky and see the moon. Unless it's within about 15 degrees of the sun, and then you can't see it. But all you have to do is simply make a little tube with your hands and look through your little fleshy apparatus there. And you can see it clearly. And I've been told that stars can be seen in the daytime by making a long black paper tube and then sighting through it. I've also read that stars are also visible from deep mine shafts and wells during the day. Now, I've never checked that out because I've never been down in the bottom of a well. And while I've been in mine shafts, I've never thought to look for stars. Unfortunately, folks, Apollo 11 was not the only mission during which star blindness was a problem. Mr. Hurt reports this about the Apollo 14 mission, quote, "The astronauts had a hard time seeing the stars, even with the help of a special monocular." That's half a binocular. That's only one side. used to supplement the scanning telescope and, get this, the sextant. Remember, I told you we'd get to it. You see, they have to have a sextant on their spacecraft in order to be able to navigate, and they can make corrections in their course by the use of the little rocket nozzles on the spacecraft. And how do you use a sextant without a horizon? Well, they had that problem in aircraft, ladies and gentlemen, so they used what they called bubble sextants, and a bubble in the sextant became the horizon. As long as you have something that you can compute as a horizon in your mathematical calculations, you can use a sextant anywhere. In space, the horizon is provided by a computer, which is built into the sextant. And you look through and you sight the star. The computer generates a horizon for you, which is mathematically calculated into your reduction, what we call a sight reduction. And you merely mate the star with the horizon, and you have your fix, or your line, I should say, one line of your fix. Due to the absence of an atmosphere to retract and filter light, the stars do not twinkle in cislunar space. Rather, as Stu Russo puts it, the stars look like little points of light or fuzzy little dots. On that same mission, Russo's crewmate, Ed Mitchell, got into the act. It's a very eerie feeling, he says. You suddenly start to recognize that, yeah, you're in deep space, that the planets are just that, planets, and that you're not really connected to anything anymore, that you are floating through this deep, black void. One of pilot Stu Russo's jobs, as his partners descended and traipsed about on the moon, was to take photos of the dark side of the moon. You see, he was in the command module. He was to take photos of the dark side of the moon for mapping purposes. While he orbited it, he reports, quote, that dim light photography was very complicated because you had to do it in total blackness, the blackest you can ever put a human being in without closing him in an absolute black room. You have no earth light, you have no sunlight, you have no reflected light bending the corners anywhere. It is black, black, end quote. And I'm going to tell you right now, because I have a degree in photography, that it is absolutely impossible to take photographs in such conditions. There is no film that has ever been manufactured on this earth, even today in the most modern times, that can take a picture in that kind of lighting conditions. We have some pretty spectacular films today that can do some pretty incredible things, but they can't do that. You must have light to take a photograph. And even with the very best of films, compared to what he's talking about, you have to have a lot of light. What has me perplexed is that he's now talking about mapping photos he took of the dark side of the moon. But if it was that dark, how, ladies and gentlemen, did he get the pictures? Because I'm telling you, now today, with the best films that have ever been invented by the mind of man, you can't do it. And back when he claims that he did it, they didn't have anything near the film that they have today. In fact, compared to some of the films we have today, the film that he used when he made his flight to the moon could be considered prehistoric, like dinosaurs. And if his film was fast enough to take pictures of a totally black moon with no light, why wasn't it fast enough to take photographs of a star, which is light? Well, nobody can answer that, not even NASA. This question embarrasses them because this statement that he made is an embarrassment. And Gene Cernan on the Apollo 17 also talked about his star blindness. Mr. Hurt wrote, quote, When the sunlight comes through the blackness of space, it's black. I didn't say it's dark, I said black. So black you can't even conceive how black it is in your mind. The sunlight doesn't strike on anything, so all you see is black. End quote. No mention of stars, not even dim and fuzzy ones, no mention of planets either. I began to wonder why NASA subsequently put up the faulty Hubble telescope if all these Apollo astronauts were really telling the truth. What did they think they were going to see? Could a telescope catch star blindness? Then I thought of a superb, super spook reason. Suppose the Hubble was built so the CIA could not look up at the stars but back down on Earth. And how do we know it's not doing that? They could then spy on the enemies of our state day and night, enemies like you and I. Seems to me that the wide-angle lens included with the package is only useful when looking at the Earth. See, you didn't even realize that, did you, folks? The Hubble telescope includes a wide-angle capability. Now, a wide-angle capability on a telescope that is looking out into space is useless. Wide-angle is only good for looking at something nearby, like the Earth. And the vast distances encountered in the universe. What good is a wide-angle telescope? Can anybody tell me that? Recently, we found out that Aldrin claims that as early as 1966, the Central Intelligence Agency had a fleet of at least 8 reconnaissance satellites equipped with telescopes called keyholes. And I can tell you that that's a fact. Someday I wish that some earthbound astronomer would take a quick peek at the repaired Hubble during the day when it's passing over his head, like the monkey who was locked in a room by a psychologist watching through the keyhole to see what he'd do. I suspect that the Hubble monkey might be found to be looking back at him. I don't know if it would or not, but it's a possibility. We know that there are some satellites up there with telescopes that are definitely watching us. It has nothing to do with paranoia. It just happens to be the truth. To put the original disclaimer to the dim and fuzzy stars is Yuri Gagarin, the first Russian cosmonaut, who says of his flight, quote, astonishingly bright cold stars could be seen through the windows, end quote. Which leads inexorably to a final question. Why lie? NASA always claimed that mankind had a universal urge to explore, and indeed the biggest reason for its existence was to advance science. The astronauts eventually came to consider themselves as scientists, since science is the advancement of knowledge, so that myth and false beliefs may be dispelled. Why lie? Professional astronomers, folks, have assured us that once we got above the Earth's atmosphere, the view would be incredible. Absolutely incredible. Can you understand that? Do you know what that means? We would leave behind the moving thermal layers of air which causes those pinpoints of light we call stars to twinkle. We would also leave behind the reduction of intensity due to pollen, dust, humidity, and the thick layer of air itself. On a clear day, we really could see forever. In retrospect, it seems that from the first Mercury shot, each and every astronaut has been compromised by the stars. Those very same stars which were reported as clearly visible by test pilots who flew the high-altitude rocket planes in the 1950s. So the final question is simply, why didn't the astronauts record on film a new scientific truth that the stars are not brilliant out in space? They had Hasselblad cameras, the finest in the world at the time. And some would argue that they're still the finest in the world. They had high-speed film, and simply by opening the lens stop and slowing down the exposure, they could have proved the truth of their words. Wouldn't that have been much better science than randomly collecting a bunch of dusty rocks? How many of you can answer that question? Anybody want to try? Write me a letter, because I'm certainly interested. Good night, everybody, and God bless you all.
You're a thousand miles away, but I still have your love to remember you by. Oh, my darling, dry your eyes.
The Hour of the Time may be contacted at HOT, that's H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, in the state of Arizona, 85925. Our phone number is 928-333-2942, and our website is www.hourofthetime.com.